Hey everyone, thanks for downloading the show. This is Garden Fork Radio. I'm your host, Eric. I'm here with my friend, Rick. Welcome, sir.
Oh, good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. I can wake up and walk and talk, much like you.
Yes, I'm up and mobile and had a little scare last week, but doing fine.
So that's kind of not the whole reason you're here, but it was kind of an excuse to get together and talk. Was I get overwhelmed easily by what's going on in the world right now with our crazy world, but then something like this, you got quite sick, and we have this modern medicine now where we have things like anesthesia and laparoscopic surgery and that, and what used to be something
and
that
morphine.
Would take
don't forget morphine. Morphine, I love morphine.
So what could have been, what used to be a big deal, you were in and out of the hospital in 4 days, and I thought it'd be an interesting topic because you're very observational about those kind of things, and I like to hear you describe things.
Ah, well, thank you. First, it's a pleasure to be here. It's always better to be seen than to be viewed. But this all started maybe a month and a half ago, and I had the world's worst case of gas. I'd really spiced up my meal, and I thought, wow. And, I even got into the bathtub and I was rolling like a harpooned whale, you know, just trying to shift the gas around, whatnot. Didn't even dawn on me it'd be my gallbladder. And so it started an inflammation process in my liver and pancreas that really got out of control. And then, about a week and a half ago, it hit again. It was a vengeance, doubled over crying kind of pain. And so she who must be obeyed, finally, as soon as her TV show was over, she took me to the emergency room. And they admitted me and gave me that wonderful morphine. And immediately they said, right side upper quadrant of your belly, just right underneath that first rib is where it's going to hurt the most. And that's what the gallbladder is. That's where it is. Some people describe it around the back of their body and say, I'm having a heart attack in my back, but it's excruciating pain. You'll note it. You should know it when you feel it. For some reason, I never made the connection. She's a nurse and she didn't make the connection. So I got admitted through the ER. And they did a fancy MRI with dye, and that night put me on the operating table to do an endoscopic process, a tube that goes down your throat. And to be real simple about it, just past the bottom sphincter of your stomach, there's a tiny little sphincter on the side of your intestine that's attached to the common bile duct. And one side, it's like a Y, if you're plumbing, goes up to the gallbladder, the other goes to the liver. And there's some more plumbing involved, but that's essentially it. And the bile that comes out of your liver is stored in the gallbladder. And when something really rich comes through, in this case, it was She Who Must Be Obeyed birthday cake, which was super rich. And fatty came through, and it set off this attack because the little sphincter in the side of your intestine opens up and it squirts out a big dollop of bile to help dissolve the fatty material. And it wouldn't do that because it was plugged with the stone.
Uh-huh.
And so they took me in and they did this procedure in two steps. One was the endoscopic, where they went and cut through that sphincter. So it doesn't function anymore. And they got out the stones, and then they ran a catheter up through the bile duct to the top of the liver and washed out. This is a very technical term. It's a medical term. It's called sludge.
Yes, I saw this.
Yeah. They wiped got all the sludge out of the gallbladder and all the stones and all the sludge out of the liver, bile ducts and whatnot. And then the next day, because it was so inflamed in there and they were kind of alarmed, at 6 a.m., they had me on the table and they removed the gallbladder. Apparently, you have to do it in that sequence. You do this endoscopic process first, and then you remove the gallbladder, which actually by that time had exploded, and which hurt quite a bit. And they got it all fixed up, and then I spent 4.5 days on morphine every 4 hours and massive doses of antibiotics. And I walked out of there with 5 little punctures on my stomach where they did the endoscopic process to get the gallbladder out.
That is amazing.
Oh, it is. You think about how you probably don't. Do you know of Gouverneur Morris?
No.
He was one of the framers of the Constitution. And I think he was governor of New Jersey, but his first name was Gouverneur. And, you know, so this is back in time, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, those guys. As he got old, he had a bladder blockage, and he actually relieved it with by inserting a polished whalebone instrument up his urethra. And he carved himself a new urethra and then punctured his bladder and died from the infection later. But you think about how far we've come in medicine since those days and to today, where they can actually look inside you non-invasively, diagnose problems, and then do these. Used to be when they did a gallbladder, it was like a 6-inch incision on your side, and it took 6 or 8 weeks to heal. Now they just literally inflate you. It's just like they have a little Craftsman tire inflator out there, and they pump you up with inert gas, and your stomach swells up real big so they can see what they're doing. And then they put some instruments in there that have eyepieces and then tools on the end of them. And they do all this through the stomach wall, and then they deflate you. And then you have to get up the next day and walk around a little bit, making very rude noises. And so it worked out really well. But, yeah, the reason I kind of wanted to talk about it on the show is that, one, it's fixable. And, two, even though I'm relatively up on – I'm not a medical person, but I'm relatively up on this stuff. And she who must be obeyed is up on this stuff. And she never suspected the gallbladder, and neither did I. And so, you know, if it's in your right side, just under your ribs – and it hurts like no pain you ever had before, then probably you need to hustle on down to the ER and have somebody look at that.
Wow. I think, I just think it's good to get the word out about that thing. And I think they do the endoscope first to drain the gallbladder, because when they go in to operate, if the liquid that's in the gallbladder gets into your
peritoneum,
right, yeah. Basically the inside of your body, it could cause an infection, or it could go bad in there.
So, right. And the reason they have to do it first is because when they're blowing you up, they're actually inflating these little passages as well. And it makes it easier if the gallbladder is still kind of in place, at least parts of it, to inflate. If you remove the gallbladder first, it's hard to find the little passages and wash them out and that kind of thing.
That's wild. That is just so wild.
And so then, really, I just set my innards to a car wash.
So it seems like a lot of being in the hospital is monitoring for infection after the fact.
Right. Well, I was getting two big doses of antibiotics every 8 hours. And they were, you know, drawing my blood. Of course, my liver enzymes were just completely out of whack. So, you know, they kept a close eye on the infection. But, you know, in the antibiotic-rich environment I was in, I was not going to get a common infection in these wounds.
There's, because of the pandemic and everything, I want nothing to do with the hospital, but it's good to know it's there. And even with the pandemic, you came out the other end. I'm sure they're like hyper careful in the hospital.
Oh yeah. Everybody's wearing masks, gloves. They tested me for COVID going in, and they tested me as I was leaving, and I was negative both times. I was kind of like, well, what happens if I am positive? And they said, we'll deal with that later. Which I don't know, might mean park me in the back of the morgue and just wait for me to go. I don't know what they had in mind, but you know, it's possible to go and be, you know, relatively safe. When I was up walking around, they made me wear a mask and gloves, and you know, it's they were doing the very best. And frankly, this is not a situation where you can wait. I didn't realize this, but it's not uncommon to have gallbladders go gangrenous.
Yes.
And I'm like, holy moly. So, you know, I felt lucky to be living in this day and time, and to be close to a hospital that does good work, and that it wasn't too long before She Who Must Be Obeyed's movie ended. So I can get there quickly. So I was ready to drive myself. But
before the show, you mentioned the care in the hospital with a doctor who's called the hospitalist.
Yeah, that's something that's really changed. Now, most of my surgeries over my lifetime have been in the Navy hospital. So I haven't been in a civilian hospital in a very long time. But the idea that Ben Casey or Marcus Welby or whoever your family physician is going to show up at your bedside is just about zero anymore. There is a person the hospital has called a hospitalist. Mine was Dr. Kim. She was wonderful. She was an internal medicine doctor. And she was my contact about what's going on, who's going to be doing what is their record. And she was reporting back to my regular doctor all these details and whatnot. But I was frustrated that first day I was in because I couldn't find anybody to really tell me what was going on. And then I finally saw up on the board in my room, said hospitalist Kim. And I said, you know, send me this Dr. Kim. I want to talk with her. And once we connected, she kept me in the loop all the way around. You know, everything that happened, why it happened, what I could expect, what I shouldn't expect, that type of thing. It was really wonderful. And then my regular doctor got to keep on seeing her patients, not having to drive up to the hospital to see me.
Yeah, there is the assembly line nature of hospitals where, you know, you're the patient, but you are the least informed person around about what's going on about you.
Yeah, that's really true.
I have a friend who's had a number of surgeries for cancer, and once you see the surgeon maybe once or twice before the surgery, but after the surgery, you basically don't see him anymore, him or her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're passed off to an oncologist or something, and there's a lot of segmentation that goes on there. So the fact that they had the hospitalists is a good thing, I think.
I think it is. And helps you make sense of what's going on. But, you know, this hospital during the pandemic has just been losing money left and right. I did a lot of probing while I was there walking around. And, you know, with my little IV pole, you know, something straight out of the movies, you know. And they have 15 OR suites. They do more knees, hips, and shoulders replacements than any place in the area. And virtually all of that stopped during the pandemic. They've been training women for decades to step up to that mammogram machine every once a year or so and get their parts smashed a little bit. And that all stopped. They have, I think, 4 colonoscopy suites, and that all stopped. They used to run they have 2 MRIs. They ran them 24 hours a day, and that pretty much stopped. And so this has been a real challenging time for the hospital because they have lost a lot of, you know, they're kind of like Disney World. I mean, you know, there's the hotel side part of that, and then you're only as good as your occupancy rate. And then there are the rides, and, you know, you're only as good as the people coming through the front door to get the special tickets and all that kind of thing. And so when both those things are cut off, the hospital is in really dire straits now since it's a private institution.
Yeah, I'm glad they're there. I have several friends that work in healthcare, and a big thank you to all those people there. So, I think everyone knows by now, I'm a big proponent of shopping local. I'm a big fan of going to my local hardware store and buying everything I can. If you are trying to find an item that you can't find in your local store, and you're considering going online, and you're considering using Amazon, this is a big ask, isn't it? Would you consider starting your shopping experience on the Garden Fork shopping page on Amazon? That was a really long sentence, wasn't it? But basically, if you could bookmark this link, amazon.com/shop/Garden Fork. amazon.com/shop/Garden Fork. Start your experience there. Your experience, listen to me. I've actually, on my shopping page, I list all the tools I use, books I like, cookware and stuff I like as well. So if you're wondering, I'm using something in one of the videos, more than likely it's listed right there as well. Again, buy local as much as you can. If you're going to shop on Amazon, consider using our link. We get a little finder's fee, and that helps pay the bills. And I'd super appreciate that. All right. Thank you. Back to the show. Well, it's good to have you back, and you are up and posting, and you posted a picture. Did you post a picture of a bee swarm on the Facebook group?
Oh, yeah. She Who Must Be Obeyed and I were sitting in the sunroom, and I looked over and I said, bee swarm. And we watched it, and it settled on this guy's shed next door. And unfortunately, he hadn't been keeping the shed up, and so there was a corner up on that, and they went inside his shed. And he was at a funeral, and so we couldn't get in there to get them. But I didn't really want them anyway, because there's this saying, little nursery rhyme that beekeepers have. How's it go? A swarm in May is worth a bale of hay. A swarm in June is worth a silver spoon. A swarm in July isn't worth a fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's happened here. I don't know why these bees swarm this late. It's well past the honey season. There's nothing for them to be gathering. We're hitting the dearth here in a month or so. And I am certain that that queen is an unmated queen. You know, she hasn't taken that flight. The guy next door, I asked him, you know, can I get in there? And he says, nobody goes in there. I don't know if he's got bodies in there or what. But, you know, he says, nobody goes in there. And I said, fine. You know, I didn't want to do anything to these bees, because the only thing you can really do with them is, if you have a hive, is do the paper, newspaper separator, and combine the hives, let them eat through the paper, and they will eventually merge into one big one. But then you have the problem of the bees that you have only produced enough honey and pollen and whatnot for the size of their hive. And if you triple that, because this is a really big swarm, then their stores are going to go short. And so you end up with welfare bees all winter long that you've got to keep feeding and putting down protein patties for, and putting down sugar and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it was better just to kind of let them be.
Yeah, B-E-E-B. Leave them be. I do have a plumbing problem.
Yes.
And this is, I screwed up. I bought this house from a Navy SEAL. And Navy SEALs love to do things together, and they do all kinds of projects. They just don't do them very well. If I'd bought this house from a CB, construction battalion, Navy guy, you know, everything would be ship shape in this house. But they put in a shower in the master bedroom and redid it, apparently. And the shower keeps backing up. And it's also screwed up, because if you're doing your own tile work, put the shower floor in first and then put the walls down to it. do not put the walls down, then put the floor inside of it.
Yep.
Because it leaks around the edges. When I pulled the drain on this thing, I can look down and I can see that the liner, the waterproof liner, really doesn't go all the way into the drain anyway. So there's probably some rotten spots underneath the floor.
Oh, geez.
But when we use it, it backs up. Now, we ran the line, and I used one of those bladders that you hook to your garden hose and you stick it in. It fills the space and then it floods the line. I think what's happened, and I can't get under the house to see, but I'll bet you they did not support the entire run because this is the farthest drain from the main drains. They didn't support the entire run. And when that line fills up, it sags in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't. And I know that it does not have the proper downed angle, which is what, 21 degrees, something like that.
I don't know. I just kind of eyeball it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's supposed to be substantial. And I suspect this run, because we're only a brick and a half high off the ground.
Oh, wow.
And so it's hard to get under the house anyway. But I suspect this run is so long that the angle is so shallow that it's allowing the center section to sag a little bit. If anybody has any thoughts other than that, let me know, because we've run the line, we've flushed it several times, and the backup's actually worse now than it was before I started fooling with it.
It is so hard for a house on a slab to do plumbing after the fact. So it's really important that it's done right at the get-go.
Right. If they had extended the main sewer line over toward the bedroom, so, you know, it'd have some place to go. I think this line runs from the main bedroom across the kitchen, across the dining room, and joins up somewhere in on the other side of the house is what I think.
That's a long run. That's a really long horizontal run.
Yeah. And she who must be obeyed is really annoyed that her feet are wet while she showers. And so I need to do something about it.
All right. Maybe more information that we need to know there. So,
but I really need to figure this out, and I'm in no shape to crawl under the house right now, but I'm doing very well, and it's a minor problem, and I just need to advertise for a skinny plumber.
Well, if anyone can help Rick, it's radio@gardenfork.tv, radio@gardenfork.tv. I don't know if any plumbers listen or not.
Huh. Oh, well, nothing else. We got Will. He's done every plumbing job in the world.
Yes, on a large scale.
Yeah, your interviews with him, last one was really good. And then Aaron before that, you know, you guys, the videos and stuff, you guys really kind of hit it out of the park with that.
Oh, thanks. We're going to be doing some more pretty soon here. Actually, we're going to have a phone call this weekend to talk about that. Those are sponsored by Troy Built with their fence talks. It's kind of cool. It's going really well. So,
I have a Troy Belt generator, and you know, we haven't used it a lot lately, but we used it a lot in the early spring, and it worked like a charm.
Yeah. It's nice to have your light bulbs turn on, your fridge works. That's all good.
Yeah. Well, and I segmented my house. And so my master bedroom is one of the major circuits. And then the freezers and the refrigerator are on the circuit that runs the entire entertainment system from the cable box out to the ham radio gear and everything. And then the entertainment system in between. So I'm entertained and we can stay cool. I use a little window mount air conditioner in the bedroom to keep that room cool. So I don't have to try to run the entire house.
Right. Oh, that's perfect. Hey, we have a new review on iTunes of the podcast.
See, when Will's on, there's never a review. When I'm on, there are plenty of reviews. Wait a minute. They're reviewing because Will was on. Oop, I'm sorry.
Good show. 5 stars by two The numeral 2 and then XEN. Lowercase XEN. 2, numeral 2, then 2 XEN. 2 XEN. 2 XEN. Check. I'm always curious about people's online names and what they mean.
Yeah.
Huh,
and,
interesting.
And the X could be a Z for 2 Zen. It's like the Z or the X in Xerox. Mm-hmm. When you're in Greek, you pronounce it with the Z. So it could be 2 Zen.
Huh. Anyway, this person says, I enjoy your show each time it's on. So even when you're on, Rick, they enjoy it.
Oh, thank you so much.
But I really appreciate the reviews. We kind of have to make the search algorithm on iTunes happy. But it plugs along. I've noticed a drop in the downloads, but I think that's related to people not going to work. Because people
listen. Probably. Yeah.
They're either on the train or the bus or the car or airplane or whatever. And I think I've actually been listening to fewer of them. So.
Yeah, I used to listen to a whole lot, and I've switched to reading books and listening books on tape or audio books.
Yeah. Just stay away from the news and then what passes for news.
Yeah. So, you know, I still say, all anyone needs in life is to listen to something like the NPR top of the hour news once or twice a day. That you will know everything that's worth knowing, without getting yourself worked into a tizzy. And yeah. it's a mental health thing for me.
Yeah. Some of my, friends and neighbors have gone off the deep end on the left and the right. And, it's a little troubling cause I can't look at their online posts anymore. I'm just like,
I think, you know, you're seeing a lot of it. And we're feeling it. I'm not a particularly, this is the perfect pandemic for me because I don't see people anyway. Yeah. So I'm home, but She Who Must Be Obeyed had a fairly active, social life, going out with friends, going to teas and coffees and visiting and having lunch together and that kind of thing. It's been much harder on her than it has been on me, but even I am beginning to feel some of the isolation right now.
Yes. Sorry, there's a pause, pregnant pause there, awkward pause. I did want to say I've been listening to a podcast. It's kind of true crime. It's called Missing in Alaska, and it's about some politicians that were lost on a small plane flight in Alaska, and it's pretty good. It's they don't have a lot of hard facts, but it suggests that they're trying to investigate whether the plane came down in an accident or was it brought down on purpose.
Hmm.
And it involves the mafia type figures. And it's interesting just how perseverant the reporter has been. He's been working on this for years, and iHeartRadio is producing a podcast, but you can download it on iTunes. It's called Missing in Alaska. It's pretty interesting.
You know, when I do listen to podcasts now, I'm listening to literary things or history things. The Guardian audio long reads, Hope Through History, which is John Mitchum, the history writer. In Our Time. You know, there are all kinds of wonderful, the long form podcast.
I listened to that one, the long form one. Yeah, the way they interview journalists and writers and stuff.
Right. The Moth, Sporkful. There's one called The Slowdown, which is 5 minutes of a poetry reading and a discussion. And it's really just kind of a nice little slowdown kind of thing. But there are all kinds of entertaining, non-political, non-ideological podcasts out there. One of them, this Garden Fork Radio, I get a big kick out of it.
Yeah. Andy from Headspace has a podcast now. It's called Headspace Radio.
Right.
And it's short. And my beef about short podcasts is it's usually an intro, an introduction, an advertisement, a plug, and then 3 minutes of content and then more ads and plugs. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, just get to the meat of it. And yeah. Andy at Headspace does that. Hey, it's Headspace Radio. Let me tell you a story about when I had to cut the lawn at the monastery with a pair of scissors. And he weaves that into, you know, a thought about meditation or your practice. And then he's done. Right. And I'm like, that's perfect. So it's called Headspace yeah. Radio.
You know, there's LeVar Burton Reads.
Yes.
And nobody, you know, if you grew up with reading Rainbow and stuff, it's really fun to listen to him. He has interesting things. But there are just all kinds of podcasts out there that have absolutely nothing to do with politics or how things are, diseases going around. And it's worth everybody's time just to, you know, make some space for your head and don't worry so much about stuff.
Yes. This morning I woke up and I was like, it just started grinding on me. And then, I managed to get it out of my head. Thank the camera operator for that. So, anyway,
all right. Well, I bet people, we used to say, I bet they've gotten to work by now, but,
they're done listening to us.
Yeah. And I've got to get some things done. Oh, by the way, the, Prius Primitive bit the dust, day before yesterday. Oh. And so, the car's worth, I think we had it 16 years. And so it was worth, about $4,000. And the battery pack, you know, people have always asked, how long does that battery pack last? Well, it crapped out at 16 years and 3 months. And it was about $5,000 to replace it. And I said, obviously, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, that's not bad.
No, that's not bad at all for a battery. The batteries in my phone die overnight.
Yeah. So I'm looking around, you know, we don't have to have a second car. I got my bike and, you know, all I need to do is, occasionally, you know, once a day, take the dogs over to the dog park so they can, see their little doggy buddies and hang out with other dogs. And, I do a lot of reading while I'm there. And that is the only time I need a car usually.
Perfect. All right. So we'll talk more about cars and stuff at our next show. Maybe next week I can get you back on, sir.
Okay. If I'm still here, I'll be there.
All right. Make it a great day, everyone. We'll see you.
Talk to you later, my friend. Bye-bye.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com. Thank you.